This tape is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442, for the Canadian office and offices overseas. Listen at the end of the tape, please. Everyone is asking, what is happening in the world and where are we in prophecy? And there are many different ideas, all the way from some people saying, well, we're in the tribulation already, to the point that we're in the beginning of sorrows. We need to watch all the things. This is really quite an event that took place. Needless to say, there are some things in prophecy that we need to understand. And there are some things that are taking place, all of which are not necessarily apparent to people who watch CNN and Fox News and so forth. What you get is the government propaganda, as it were, through the news media. And even on the Internet, with all the things that they have, there are many sources of different speculation, some good, some bad, some indifferent. So you have to balance it all out with what we have in the Bible and what that teaches us so we know what's going on. So let's ask another question. What should we be doing? Now, there's something very important that we need to do. There are several things, in fact. But the first one, let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. And when we get here, let's understand that we are to live by faith. The just shall live by faith, regardless of the circumstances that you're confronted with. Because not all things are going to work out the way that you think. As a matter of fact, we were discussing last night that very few prophecies, though accurately fulfilled by what the Bible has said, has worked out the way that we have imagined. So what we need to do is, again, look carefully at the Bible, but what we first need to do is look at ourselves from the point of view that if we don't have the right perspective and if we don't understand what we need to be doing, then all the knowledge in the world and understanding of prophecy is going to be in vain. Now let's come to 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 1. Though I speak with tongues of men and angels and have not love, I am become a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. Not as. You become that. And though I have the gift of prophecy, which everyone wants to have, and understand all mysteries, that is, all the mysteries of the prophecies and the Word of God, and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. So that's where we need to keep our perspective, you see. Because knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. So if you have knowledge of prophecy and you get puffed up in it, chances are you're wrong. Now, have we seen that in the past? Yes. Okay. So, can we learn something from the past? Absolutely. So, that's something really important to really grasp on. Now, the King James has charity here. Now, I have another book at home that I'm using to do a final comparison of the translation of the New Testament, which is called the English Hexpla, which there are six translations of the Bible in English, beginning with Wycliffe, which was taken from the Latin Vulgate by Jerome. Then we have Tyndale's translation. Then we have the Great Bible by Bishop Cranmer. Then we have the Geneva Bible. Then we have the Reims, which is the Catholic Bible, done in Reims, France, to be sent to England to countermand the work of Tyndale. Then we have the King James Version of the Bible. And in going through them, I found a very interesting thing, which was this. One of the men who helped Tyndale was Coverdale. And Coverdale was one of the main persons in translation of the New Testament for the Geneva Bible in Switzerland, because Geneva was a place for the exiled English scholars to go. And so when you read Tyndale's New Testament and the Geneva New Testament, is almost verbatim, and the reason being is that I'm sure that Coverdale had Tyndale's Bible. Now when you look at the King James, because the Tyndale and Geneva had the word agape, which is here in 1 Corinthians 13, which is translated into King James charity, they have it love. Well, what happened was you had Latinists on the committees for the King James. And so the Latinists put in the Latin word, the charity, which is in Latin love. So they had to put their sort of stamp in it. And so that it would not look too much like it was just a direct takeover of Tyndale, though they ended up with 90 to 95% of Tyndale. So that's why you have that. But you have to have the love of God. If you don't love God, and if you don't love each other, everything else doesn't matter. Doesn't matter about the prophecies. It doesn't matter about anything else. Now let's come here to Mark 12. And I think it's interesting that Mark 12 was given before we have the section of Mark 13, which is the parallel account of Matthew 24. But Mark 12, and of course this was right during the time when Jesus was coming up every day before his crucifixion. He was coming up from Bethany up to the temple and teaching every day. And of course he had all of the confrontations there. And of course, what was it that got Jesus Christ through all the agony of the crucifixion and everything? His love of the Father. And you can see that when you read John 14, 15, 16, and 17, which are the words of Christ leading up to, from the Passover, and leading up to his arrest and subsequent trial and crucifixion. He talked about the love of God, the love of God, the love of God. So likewise, he explains the same thing in his confrontation to the people who come to him and question him, such as the scribes did in this particular case, wanting to know which was the first or the primary commandment of all. Now, verse 29, Mark 12. Jesus answered and said to him, "The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment." So this is what it needs to be with us, brethren. This is how it needs to be. All the prophecies are going to work out the way that God wants them to work out. No question about it. And if we love God this way, and then the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself, and then the other one that Jesus gave, love each other as I have loved you, and if we do that, then God will give us enough understanding so we don't have to be in fear and trepidation, nor do we have to be anxious and worried and wondering, is a terrorist going to blow up a bomb in my house? Because we can trust in God, and He will place His angels about us. But if we go about seeking to do the Lord's work in fulfilling prophecies, or go out and fight the battles which are God's battles, then we're going to find ourselves in trouble. So we're not going to do that. Now, let's come here to Jude, book of Jude, verses 20 and 21. Book of Jude, it's one of the shortest epistles in the Bible, but it contains some very profound things that fit in for our day to day. Now, when they were having difficulties, right toward the close of the apostolic church, Jude wrote this tremendous epistle exhorting them to return to the faith once delivered to the saints because they were leaving it. And, of course, the faith once delivered to the saints was that which Christ gave. And it's all based on the love of God. So what he says here in verse 20 is very important. But you, beloved, building up yourselves on your most holy faith, praying in the Holy Spirit. The Spirit will lead us, and so forth. Verse 21, keep yourself in the love of God. And that's what we need to do in this time. Keep ourselves in the love of God. And you know what will happen if we do that? God is going to give us more understanding of the things that are taking place. Now, also with that, he also gave some direction on how to reach out to scattered brethren who have been scattered and deceived by the things that have taken place. And we live in a similar time. Verse 22, and of some, that is, brethren that you know, who have been deceived and have fallen from God somewhat, have compassion, making a difference. So there are some people that are just weak that you need compassion on. You need to show a difference to them and help them be restored to God, which several people have done so recently with the Rome's challenge to the Protestants. They've given that to those who have been in worldwide and have gone to Sunday keeping, and there have been some who have come back out of Sunday keeping. So that's helpful. Verse 23, and others save with fear. In other words, you tell them you're going into the lake of fire. See? Pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. And again, turning them to Christ. Notice what he says here in verse 4. Now unto him that is able to keep you from falling, which is Christ. And that's why in these times we always look to Christ and follow Christ and build on that foundation. See, to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. To the only wise God and Savior be glory and majesty, dominion and power, both now and forever. Amen. Now let's come to John 16. If we do that, God is going to give us understanding of things that are going to happen. He may not give us understanding of things such as an outline of prophecy like Daniel or Revelation, because that has already been given. But he is going to give us understanding as things come up. And I hope today that some of the things I present fall into that category of giving us an understanding of things that are taking place, some of the things that are happening behind the scenes that we really are not completely aware of. Now, John 16 and verse 13. Now, let's go back to verse 12. I have yet many things to say unto you, but you cannot bear them now. And one of the things that he had to communicate to them, which he did just before the apostles died, was that it's going to be a long time till I return. And if he would have told it to them right at that point, they wouldn't have been able to handle it. And he was revealing to them, like in the first part, let's come back here to John 16, verses 1 through 3. These things I've spoken unto you, that you should not be offended. They shall put you out of the synagogues, because I'm sure they thought that they would go out and convert a lot of people in the synagogues. Didn't happen that way, did it? No. Yea, the time comes that whoever kills you will think that he is doing service for God. And these things they will do unto you because they have not known the Father nor me. So when we come down here to verse 13, after he says that there are other things that he didn't tell them because he couldn't bear it now. Howbeit, when that one, is the way it should read because it's from the Greek ekinos, when that one, the Spirit of truth is come, it will guide you into all truth. For it shall not speak of itself, but whatsoever it shall hear, it shall speak, and it will show you things to come. And now we are living at the time, close to the end of the age, when many of these things are coming to pass. Of which part of it involves the events that took place on 9/11 in the year 2001. So we have to remain in the love of God. We have to love each other. We have to let the Holy Spirit guide us. And then there's something else that we need to do. Let's come to Matthew 24. Don't make it Mark 13. Let's go to Mark 13. Then we'll go to Matthew 24. Mark 13. Now there's something else that we need to do, which is to watch. So we have to be aware. Now, living in this day and age, we have to be sure and watch the right things. Because it's easy to get waylaid by watching the things which are not right. So we also have to ask God to help us watch the right things. Now, verse 31, Mark 13. Verse 31. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. So it's all going to happen. No question about it. Then he says, now you're not necessarily going to know. He says, but of that day and hour knows no man. No, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son. At that particular point, he did when he gave the revelation to John. He understood it then because the Father revealed it to him. But the Father. Now, verse 33. Take heed, watch, and pray. Now, if there's ever a time we need to take heed and watch and pray, and how many times have I said, through all of the things that we've gone through the last few years, when there's been prosperity, when there's been peace, when there's been employment, when there has been generating of wealth, and all these things, I've said, brethren, we need to take advantage of the time that we have now. We need to be zealous in the good times, not wait for the bad times to come, and all of a sudden be zealous then. Because you might not be able to be zealous at that time if you become so lukewarm in the meantime. See? So he says, take heed, pay attention, watch and pray. For you know not when the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house and gave authority to his servants, and to every man his work, and commanded the porter to watch. Watch you therefore, for you know not when the master of the house comes. At evening, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning. Now notice all of these things encompass the night, from sunset to sunrise. So it's going to be a time when darkness is upon this earth. And the darkness is coming. And if you don't recognize the darkness, then it's going to come upon you, and you won't know. Now he says here, verse 36, lest coming suddenly, he finds you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say to all, and that's from that time forward, watch. Now let's come over to Matthew 24. So we need to be watching. And of course, now we can watch as never before. Now we can watch. We have more news outlets. We have more instantaneous communication in the world than ever before. There are so many news outlets on the internet that the news channels are losing their audience right and left. They are going down, 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 down. See? And more people are becoming aware of some of the things that are taking place. Now let's pick it up here at verse 42. Okay, so we're to watch, then we find the next thing we need to be doing. Verse 42, watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord does come. But know this, if the good man of the house had known in which watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have allowed his house to be broken up. Therefore, you also be ready. Now, the Boy Scouts have a motto, be prepared. It's the same thing. We are to be ready all the time. For in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. Now, we can apply this to the literal return of Christ, and we can apply it to our own personal day of the Lord when God calls us to the place of rest in the grave. And that is our day of the Lord, because our next thought will be resurrected and see Christ, correct? So that is your day of the Lord. So we need to always be ready. Who then is a faithful servant and a wise servant, whom his Lord has made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Now this is talking directly about those who are elders and who are ministers, who have been given the overseership of the household of God, that is the church of God, to give them meat in due season. Help them to watch, help them to be ready, help them to pray, help them to draw close to God, to always love God. Now, verse 46, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. So there's the thing that goes along with the others. Love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and being. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love the brethren as Christ has loved us. Watch, and then be doing. That's what we need to do today, especially when we consider what Jesus said. Remember, he told his disciples, he said, walk in the light while you have the light, because the time is coming when the light will not be here, and when the darkness comes, if you're not walking in the light now, then you're going to stumble. And when the darkness comes, he says, no man can work. So he says here to the one who is doing what he's so doing, verse 47, verily I say to you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, to eat and drink with the drunken, that is, go back into the world, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him, and in an hour in which he's not aware, and shall cut him asunder and appoint his portion, appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So that's quite a stern warning for all, isn't it? Right? Now let's make some heads and tails out of the things that are happening. Now, I appreciate everybody sending me everything, but I get so much, it's almost to the point now that I have between 50 and 100 pages of material to read every day. So obviously, I can't read all of it, but I go through and get the most of it that I can. Okay? Now, first of all, I'm going to read some excerpts to you from the McIlvaney Intelligence Advisor, the MIA. And he's been really quite fairly accurate. And accurate ahead of time, so far ahead of time, that a lot of people have not believed him. You go back 5 years, he said that the next war is going to be in what he called it was something like Agistan, something like that. Don't hold me to that word. But saying that the next war is going to come with all the radical Muslims in the area of Afghanistan, Turkestan, Turkmenistan, all of that area. Where is the war today? Right there. Here's the editor's note. This is one of the longest and most somber issues of the MIA we have had in the last 25 years of publication. Also one of the most important. In an attempt to analyze the terrorist war which has been launched against America, where it may take us, and the ominous economic, financial, political implications for our country. Please study this issue carefully and consider the financial personal protection suggestions for the challenging times which lie ahead. Share copies of this issue with your friends, relatives, and associates. So this one is entitled Jihad in America, A Nation Under Siege. And, of course, just yesterday, right in Atlanta, and, of course, that's the major center for Delta Airlines, they had one man go backwards, run into the area past all of the checkout people and disappeared. So they shut down the whole airport because of one man. See? The terrorist goal is to inflict terror and fear, thereby controlling you. Remember that. Now let's tie this in with Allah. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the Islamic religion or the Muslim religion, which does not worship the same God. Now I'm going to be quoting here. And this is a quote from Sheikh Omar Abdallah Rahman, who was the one who was convicted of masterminding the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993. And he spoke at an Islamic rally in Detroit in 1991, and here are some of his words. The obligation of Allah is upon us to wage jihad for the sake of Allah. It is one of the obligations that we must undoubtedly fulfill. And we conquer the lands of the infidels, and we spread Islam by calling the infidels to Allah. If they stand in our way, we wage jihad for the sake of Allah, that is, kill them. That was right here in the United States. The jihad, continuing on, this is from another one, Sheikh Abdullah Azam, and he's addressing the first conference of jihad in Brooklyn in 1989. The jihad, the fighting, is obligatory on you wherever you can perform it. Just as in America you must fast, so you must also wage jihad. The word jihad means fighting, and fighting with a sword. And we're going to see that there is no religion as fanatical and warmongering as Islam. Allah, the Most High and Exalted, ordered us to kill the idol worshippers, which means Christians and Jews, the enemies of Allah. Fight the idol worshippers all together, just as they fight all of you. When you go into battle, fight the idol worshippers wherever you find them, pursue them, and finish them off. And this was in a speech by Sheikh Abdul Alid Zindini, director of the Al-Kifa Center, Brooklyn, 1989. Now, when you understand how many Muslims there are in the United States, and most of the mosques are run by radical imams who preach this thing every Friday. Now let's review some of the things that have taken place, lest you think that this is all of a sudden taken place. November 4th, 1979, Islam students stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran, holding 52 hostages for 444 days and labeling America as the Great Satan. October 23, 1983, Shiite suicide bombers blow up the French military quarters and a U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut, killing 141 Marines and 58 French paratroopers. Remember that? December 12, 1983, Shiite Muslims set off car bombs in front of U.S. and French embassies in Kuwait City, killing 5 people and wounding 86. September 20, 1984, car bomb at U.S. Embassy Annex in East Beirut, killing 16 and injuring the ambassador. June 16, 1985, Shiite Muslim gunmen seize TWA Boeing 727, forcing it to Beirut, Lebanon. They demand the release of 700 Arabs held by Israel. A U.S. Navy diver is murdered. 39 Americans are held until they are released on July 1 of that year after Syrian mediation. So this has been going on a long time. But you see, we forget. And all the time that this has been going on, more and more Muslims have been immigrating to the United States. And I think he says we have 15 million Muslims in America. Question, how many are sleepers? Now, what is a sleeper? A sleeper is someone who has a secret mission to give at a designated time whenever his unknown boss calls him on the phone and tells him to do it. Could be a car bomb. Oh, boy, if you get a car bomb and you kill the infidels, man, instant heaven. See, so I tell you. Okay, August 8th, 1985, crippled American Jew Leon Klinghoffer is killed by Palestinian militants who seized the Italian cruise liner Achille Laurel. September 5th, 1986, hijackers seize Pan Am jumbo jet carrying 358 people at Karachi Airport, 20 people killed when security forces stormed the plane. December 21st, 1998. Pan Am is no longer here. They went bankrupt because of these things. You know that? And because of having to cover these things which the insurance didn't cover. Pan Am Boeing 747 Flight 103 explodes over Lockerbie, Scotland on a flight from London to New York, killing 270 people, including residents of the town. And the editor makes a note, this writer was originally scheduled to be on that flight along with 85 other Americans as we returned from a tour of South Africa. A scheduling conflict in South Africa a month or so earlier pushed our flight, our return flight on Pan Am 103 back 1 week. February 26, 1993. A bomb explodes in a parking garage below the World Trade Center in New York City, killing 6 people and wounding more than 1,000. Planned simultaneously were to blow up the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, and the new UN building were thwarted. So they've been planning this stuff for a long time. 6 Islamic militants were convicted of the bombing and sentenced to life in prison. And of course, your bleeding hearts come and say, "Oh, boo!" See? April 19th, 1995. A bomb rips through Alfred P. Mora Federal Building in Oklahoma City, killing 168 and wounding more than 500. So they get Timothy McVeigh. But he was the fall guy. Islamic terrorists were involved. See, it's not necessarily the person that looks like the one who did it. He may just be a dupe. You know, that's what the whole television program of Columbo and the television program Matlock are based upon. So remember that with all of this. November 13, 1995, car bomb detonates at U.S. military headquarters in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, killing 5 American service personnel. June 25, 1996, car bomb explodes outside the Cobra Towers in Doran, Saudi Arabia, killing 19 American servicemen and wounding hundreds of other people. Members of Islamic terror group Hezbollah were indicted for the attack. August 7, 1998, car bombs explode outside embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, within minutes of each other, killing 224 people and wounding thousands. Bin Laden is blamed. February 1999, 3 Americans are abducted and killed by Colombian guerrillas. March 1, 1999, Congo-based Rwanda rebels killed 2 Americans along with 6 other foreign tourists in Uganda. October 12, 2000, terrorist bomb kills 17 U.S. sailors on USS Cole as it refuels in Yemen port of Aden. The United States says Saudi exile Osama bin Laden was primary suspect. And Michael Savage prefers to call him OBL. Instead of giving the dignity of his name. Now then it talks about there were many warnings. We have had many warnings of this, just like with Pearl Harbor. See? And Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew it was coming. Now someone told me that George Bush Sr. made a comment on September 11th, 1991, which is interesting, 9/11/91, that this country needed a major disaster in order to bring in the New World Order. Now, why would he say that? And that shows that there is no allegiance to the United States by any of those who are our government officials. It is all feigned in order to bring in, and his son is no different. It is all to bring in the one world order, and that, brethren, is what this war is all about. And everything that goes with it. Okay, he says here, Islamic terror is directed at 2 targets. First is social, in the form of open, enlightened capitalist world, a world that believes in freedom of speech and religion, a world that draws its strength from science, technology, and progress. It arouses fanatical Muslims' feelings of burning envy because it promises the infidels an affluent life in contrast to the fate of the true believers of the Islamic countries, which is what? Rocks, barrenness, and desert. And that's the inheritance that God gave them. And so what do we have? We have a family feud as to who has what and who doesn't. And who's more righteous? That's what it gets down to. The second target is religious. The Judeo-Christian civilization that doesn't accept the Quran as the sole belief that should and must be adopted. The U.S. and Israel are the large and the small devils of the Western and even Eastern Europeans are not much better. If the infidels cannot be defeated, they must destroy the world and they must be destroyed, in a world embracing jihad in the name of Allah and His Prophet Muhammad. Okay. Now, let's understand something. It is not in Bible prophecy that they are going to succeed. They will be defeated. And I'll read you a prophecy in the book of Obadiah here in just a little bit. The attacks on the Pentagon and Twin Towers of the WTC are only the first course on the menu. If the U.S. doesn't come to its senses and start to wage war to the death against fanatic Islam and against international terrorism, it will also be served the main course. Now then, it gives something about understanding the religion and mindset of radical Islam. We want this small Muslim community to serve as a dagger in the center of this United States civilization, said Sammy Dafar, head of the Islamic Charity Project, speaking at ICP Radical Islamic Convention in the United States. See, we have freedom of speech to the extent that our enemies can stand up, condemn us, tell us what their plans are going to be, and we sit back and say, oh, let's be nice. Now, here's a quote from the Quran, chapter 4, verse 56. Those that deny our revelations will burn in fire. No sooner will their skins be consumed than we will give them other skins so that they may truly taste the scourge. This is taken from chapter 5, verse 34 of the Quran. Those who make war against God and His apostle Muhammad and spread disorder in the land shall be put to death or crucified or have their hands and feet cut off on alternate sides and be banished from the country. Now, what I want you to do is go back and you read some things in the Old Testament. You'll see that in the Old Testament, God is a God of love. He says, love the stranger, love the fatherless, love the widow. When there is war to be made, He declares the war and then says, go to it. Whereas the Muslims, they sit in the seat of God and make the judgment and kill anybody they desire. Now, here's one from chapter 17, verse 33 of the Quran. You shall not kill any man whom God has forbidden you to kill except for a just cause. Well, the Quran says kill everyone but the Muslims. Okay. Now, then he gives something here concerning no one believed Hitler when he wrote his book, Mein Kampf. Now, Here's some quotes from Victor Mordecai, who wrote in his book, Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat? Iran, a major player in the international Islamic terror network, says regularly in its daily newspaper. So you watch and see. Iraq is next. Iran is next. Saudi Arabia will either get in line or it will be next, because they're going to go after it. And in order to have the New World Order and put in everything they need and to bring all these Muslim nations in line, they need to get rid of the terrorists. And get rid of them they will. Have you watched the news to see how quickly the Afghans were to say, we are so thankful you are here, and the women took off all of their coverings, the men shaved their beards, and you think they're ever going to go back to that? No way. No way. So we're going to see. I'll get to it in a little bit. They are going to win this terrorist war. Otherwise, they will not be able to have the New World Order. Neither will they be able to have a time where they say that we have peace. Okay? Let's turn this tape to the other side, please. Here's what they say in their daily newspaper. America is the great Satan. America is doomed. Death to America. It is only a question of time. That is until September 11th. This may have sounded comical to Americans, but for someone like myself, who lives in the Mideast, says Victor Mordecai, who lives in Israel and monitors all of the Arab newspapers and radio programs and television stations, and who deals daily with the Islamic radio, TV, and press, that is all we hear. The Muslim extremists say and mean it. It is the Islamic Mein Kampf. And for them, the way to strike at Israel, America's surrogate, is by striking at the great Satan, America, the puppeteer pulling Israel's strings and supporting it. Yes, there are an estimated 15 million Muslims in America. And 1% of those, 150,000, are the radical fundamentalists who hate America and Israel living here. See? So it's something. Another quote from the Quran. Oh, before we get there. Islam espouses world dominion either through mass missionary conversion program or through conquest. It is one of the world's only religions wherein a significant number of its adherents preach hatred of its enemies, death to its enemies, and a very high place in Islamic heaven if one dies a martyr's death through killing infidels. The philosophy is found not just in the Quran, but in other revered writings of Islam, such as the Haditha, that is Muhammad's interpretation of the Quran, and other of his writings. Martyrdom is encouraged by radical fundamentalists. And we read from the Quran, chapter 9, verse 5. So when the sacred months have passed, then slay the idolaters. Wherever you find them, take them captive and beseech them, and lay a wait for them in every ambush. Islamic fundamentalists believe in the death of the enemies of Allah, apostate Muslims, non-Muslims, especially Jews and Christians. They believe that the greatest of those enemies is Israel and the Jews and America, which they call the great Satan. The Christians, who are the Christians, by way of illustration, in the Sudan over the past 10 years, fundamentalist Islamic leaders have slaughtered over 2 million black Christians. In southern Sudan. CNN, where are you? Fox News, where are you? If you base your life on that, you've got pure vanilla and lies. And he continues with virtually no outcry from the Christian West. Then he gives a short history of Islam. I just want to pick up on one part of it, which I'll just paraphrase here. The way that they got to the one God Allah was this. They believe in a solar calendar of 360, a lunar calendar of 360 days at the time of Muhammad. And there was a God for each day. So he eliminated all of the other gods except the greatest one, who was Allah. And Allah is the war god, the moon god, the equivalent then of Zeus or Mercury is in the Greek world. Okay. And so he is the war god. And what did God say of Ishmael? It's no wonder that he has a religion like that. He said, Ishmael will be a wild ass, and his hand will be against everyone his brother. So all the Arabs continually fight among themselves. Okay? And then Esau, he would live by the sword. And Esau and Edom are the same. So you've got all of them combined with what's going on here. Now, here is a quote by the words of a Lebanese sociologist, Dr. Sania Hamadi, who says, Islamic society is ruthless, stern, and pitiless. While this may sound harsh, even coming as it does from a Muslim, Dr. Hamadi knows what he's talking about. In Egypt, for instance, a scholar of Cairo's influential Al-Azhar University recently pronounced that AIDS victims should be killed to stop them from harming humanity, suggesting that in the process that such persons should be denied water, food, and medical treatment. Also, on amputation day, they have an amputation day. Did you know that? At Sudan's Cobra prison, orderlies wave several severed limbs of wrongdoers charged under the Sharia law in front of huge crowds who respond with frenzied chants of Allah Akbar, which is praising Allah, and other Islamic slogans. And what they do, they cut off the right hand and the left foot. And the Palestinians have done that to so many people that there are literally thousands of Palestinians that have had that done to them. And so it says here, throughout the Middle East, many more Muslims, that is, moderates who have opposed the radical fundamentalists, have been killed by the fundamentalists than Jews and Christians. So what all of this is doing, it is moving the Muslim religion to a more moderate stance, or they're dead. It's moving the Islamic nations to be more willing to come into the New World Order. Then he goes on showing that there are millions of fanatical Arabs in almost every place. Now he gives a video to write for, so I'll give you this information here. The video is Jihad in America, which should be watched by every American who cares about the present developments. I'll give you the 1-800 number. It's $23 plus $3 for shipping. It is 1-800-540-0828 for Jihad in America. Once again, 1-800-240-0828. Now, I know that different people are going to accuse me that I tell you so many books to read. It's not mandatory to read them. It's only optional. But I tell you what, we have to really read to keep up on what's going on today. Otherwise, we're going to end up like these Muslim fanatics who live in the 7th century. Now, another book is Fanatic Islam, a Global Threat Question, and Christian Revival for Israel Survival. Cost of each of these is $15 plus shipping of $3, and you order that at the same number. Same number. Then he gets into state-sponsored terrorism. Then he recommends how to do it. He suggests that they have a new Bush doctrine, kill the snake by the head, that is, go after them. And then he says that it's estimated there are between 30 and 50 suicide bombers in America waiting for their assignment. And he says, a word of caution. Now, here's what all of this is doing to America. And by the way, you will notice that George W. Bush, who was so good at working coalitions, he's not consulting anybody but his cabinet, and he's signing executive orders to set up secret courts. Now, everybody says, good. But they're going to lower the bar down and down and down and down. And trust me, remember Waco. And remember Ruby Ridge. And remember when the Antichrist comes on the scene and we say, this is not the Antichrist, we become the terrorists. So what they are doing? He says, word of caution, don't turn America into a police state in order to fight terrorism. It's already done. Sorry. War and threat of war will compel those nations. Here's what they are saying. Here's why it's coming in. They have mounds of legislation, which I am sure was already written up before this event took place, knowing that they could enact it. And how to do it? You can't get anything through Congress, so just have our King Bush do it. Executive order is the work of a king. It is an edict. War and threat of war will compel those nations the most attached to liberty to resort to protection and security to institutions which have a tendency to destroy civil and political rights. To be more safe, they at length are willing to run the risk of being less free. So bring on the national identity card, bring on the thumbprint, bring on all of these things, seal off the border, put in all of the spies in the light poles and telephone poles and on the streets and in the sky. And by the way, they have sent up hundreds of baseball-sized satellites with all the miniaturized circuitry in it, which make all the other big ones obsolete. That quote that I gave to you was given by Alexander Hamilton back at the beginning of this nation. Comment was made by Tim that he went to a computer convention where they have all the latest thing out there. And they have biometrics everywhere, for the eye, for the hand, for the breath, for the digital face scan, for voice recognition, almost everything. Now they have one where you come up and they have a quick scan of your face and it matches with what's in there, but you see, they can overcome that. You can put on a mask of the person, you see. So eventually all these things are going to fail. Please understand, anything that is biometric or of your body is not the mark of the beast, because that's going to be put on your right hand or on your forehead. So all of these things are going to take place. Then Tom Brokaw said, we will have to revisit many of our freedoms as a result of this attack. Because of the terrorist attacks, Americans will have to make choices between security and civil liberties. William Cohen, we must not let the terrorists win. If we abandon our democracy to fight them, they win, said Patrick Leahy. So then, we're going to have it. We are in a police state. And more it is coming. No question about it. That's another purpose that they want to do. And the way to get it done is have it so that the population is so terrified that they walk up and say, do it. Give me the identity card. I have nothing to hide. Search my car. I have nothing to hide. Search my house. I have nothing to hide. So therefore, if you resist, you have something to hide. Right? Remember the man who made the joke at the when they were checking his luggage? He said, what are you looking for, a bomb? They arrested him. Now, how's that for loss of freedom? Okay? So, I don't have the report with me, but it shows that these wars and getting rid of the terrorists, and I think they will get rid of the terrorists. I don't think that these Muslim countries want to be bombed out like Afghanistan. And look at the response of the Afghan people once they have the freedom. It's going to be the same in all the other countries because most of the Muslims are oppressed by the radicals themselves. So I predict that this will be successful. Now let's go to the book of Obadiah. No, let's go to Psalm 83 first. Psalm 83. Psalm 83. Keep you not silent, O God. Hold not your peace. Verse 1. And be not still, O God. For lo, your enemies make a tumult. Not our enemies, your enemies. And they that hate you have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted against your hidden ones. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may no more be in remembrance. Now that's not only the Jews, but us, being the 10 tribes of Israel. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against you. Notice who they are. All the ones in the Middle East we've been fighting, right? Edom. Have a little more to say about Edom and Esau. Ishmaelites. Moab. The Harjanides, which then is Syria. Gibeah. Ammon. Amalek, which is the fiercest of the Esauites. The Philistines, who are the Palestinians, the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher is also with them. Now, this is referring to the Assyrians, who are not what we know as the German Assyrians. And they have helped the children of Lot. And do unto them as you did to the Midianites, and to Sisera, as to Jabin at the brook of Kishon. So then, that shows who the enemy is. Okay, now it says down here, verse 13. O my God, make them like a wheel, as stubble before the wind, as the fire burns the wood, and as the flame sets the mountains on fire, so persecute them with your tempest, and make them afraid with your storm. Fill their faces with shame, that they may seek your name, O Lord. Let them be confounded and troubled, yea, let them be put to shame and perish, that men may know that you, whose name alone is Jehovah, are the Most High over all the earth. So God has a battle against the God of Allah, not necessarily determined upon our righteousness, but this is also a battle against God. Even the, how should we say, the apostate way that the Protestants, Catholics use the name of God and the way that the Jews use the name of God, they are against the people that God has, that are His people. Now let's come to the book of Obadiah. Okay. Book of Obadiah, and let's see why this takes place. Okay? Now, hold your place right there, the book of Obadiah. That's just before Jonah. Okay? You got that? Now, come to the book of Malachi. Just fold the page over so you won't lose your place. the book of Malachi, which is the last book of the minor prophets, and let's read verses 1 through 4. Now remember, God has a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob because of the promise to Abraham. So we may have mercy when we really don't deserve mercy because of the promise to Abraham and because of Esau. Now let's read it. Verse 1, the burden of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. I have loved you, says the Lord, yet you say, wherein have you loved us? Well, by fulfilling the promise to Abraham, he has loved Israel. And I think this, the reason that God chose Israel is because we are a naive, emotional, and stupid people when it comes to evil and shrewdness. So God has to protect us from ourselves because we let the enemies do us in stupidity. Just because we want to be nice. That's the nature of Israel. It is a good quality in peace. It is a bad quality in war. Then he continues, was not Esau Jacob's brother, says the Lord, yet I love Jacob. So God is going to do something for Jacob, the physical descendants of Jacob, because of the promise to Abraham and because he loves Jacob. And I hated Esau, laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. Now, who are the perpetrators of the terrorists, even in Afghanistan? Ishmaelites and Esauites. Whereas Edom says, we are impoverished. That's what they say. We have sand and rock and stones, but we have oil. And we have Allah. But we will return and build the desolate places. In other words, we're going to capture the inheritance that Jacob stole from us. But that'll never happen. Thus says the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. They shall call them the borders of wickedness, the people against whom the Lord has indignation forever. So that's why I believe we're going to win this terrorist war. Not because we are good, not because we are strong, but because God has war with Amalek in every generation. Now let's come over here and see about Esau in the book of Obadiah. And here's why he has war against them. Verse 9. Your mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed, to the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter. For your violence against your brother Jacob, shame shall cover you, as you have been cut off forever. In the day that you stood on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even you were as one of them. See, God expects the brother to defend brother. But he didn't. He fought against him. And you should have not looked on the day of your brother in the day that he became a stranger. Neither should you have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, which they are doing. Neither should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress, fanatical Islamism. You should not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, you should not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. See, when God corrects someone, he's going to correct them. But don't you come in and take advantage of it and really do them in. You are a brother. You should have gone in to help them, to really turn them back to God. But instead, you took and you slaughtered and you destroyed. Now, I'm sure you can read of the downfall of Jerusalem in the book of Josephus and see where the actual fulfillment of this took place. Neither should you have stood, verse 14, in the crossroad to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither should you have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress. For the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. So this is going to be done close to the day of the Lord. As it has done, it shall be done unto you. As you have done, it shall be done unto you. Your reward shall return upon your own head. For as you have drunk upon my holy mountain, so shall all the heathen drink continually. Yea, they shall drink, and they shall swallow down, and they shall be as though they had not been. Now, of course, that comes into the second return of Christ, too. For upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions. And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble, and they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken it. Now, I want you to notice this does not depend on the righteousness of Jacob and Joseph, does it? Now, who's in there doing the battle? The sons of Jacob, northwestern Europe, and Joseph, Britain, and America. So they're going to win. Then, what will happen? They will say, peace, peace, new world order. And then, there's going to be the 3.5 years of false peace. Okay. How long is it going to take to fight? We don't know. This is not going to be easy. It's going to be long. Now, there is something else that is taking place, which we need to watch. All the while this is taking place, remember this, whenever you have your eyes fixed on one thing, you better look around because there are other things that are going to take place. And what is taking place is this. Though Israel is going to fight, and I believe win this terrorist war, Satan is busy on the other side working the preparation for the coming of the Great One or the Antichrist. And he's also setting up the whole world for it. And it's coming in a way which people do not suspect. And it's coming in the way of Harry Potter. Not only his books in almost every language of the world, which have sold 110 million, that was 4 months ago, but also the coming of the new movie of Harry Potter, which is being released 66 days after 9/11. 6 times 11. And this comes from a report called The Cutting Edge. Now, says, we have repeatedly warned in our Harry Potter section that these novels, which they refer to here, were the most dangerous to the spiritual health of young children than anything that has ever come on the scene, but not only young children, but to adults. Because you see, what has happened is this. America has been programmed through the first stage of Satanism or witchcraft by starting getting rid of God in school way back. Remember the Scopes trial? Okay. Then gradually, then we had World War II, and now we're strong, and we don't trust in God the same way we used to. And remember, the ecumenical movement started just right after World War II. All of these things Satan is controlling, see. And also, if you read the Vatican Assassins, the Jesuits are controlling, the Illuminati are controlling, and all of their branches, they're all working overtime, see. Then we came to the 60s, and the first stage of Satanism is launched. And now, the second stage is pretty well going to be capped off with this to prepare them for the third stage. And the third stage of Satanism is that you get rid of God and you become like Romans, the first chapter, and worship the created, and you worship Satan. Because what does it say of the beast? Satan gives him his seat and his authority and his great power. And the whole world worships Satan and worships the beast, saying, who is able to make war against the beast? So all of this is paving the way, and we're going to have the biggest psychological preparation for this through Harry Potter that I wrote down here. Here's my nickname for Harry Potter. Lord Fauntleroy, the juvenile Antichrist. Not only for children, but adults. Children absolutely love these novels, and many want to emulate their new heroes, Harry Potter. And how many kids do you see today now with Harry Potter glasses? These nice round Harry Potter glasses, and they have their hair hanging down over, you know, their forehead, just like Harry Potter. Also, Harry Potter was admitted into the witchcraft school at age 11. So 11 is a big number. I'll get to that a little bit later. So Harry Potter, the Hermione, Granger, Ron Weasley, and the evil Malfoy, and others of Warthog School of Wizardry and Witchcraft. New Age authors have repeatedly stated that the New Age Christ will not appear until and unless a significant portion of the population were preconditioned to accept him and his values. They're being preconditioned, aren't they? On August 18, 1991, when I sneaked into a members-only seminar at the House of Theophacy, the New England director stated that when Antichrist arose, there would be three kinds of people. One, those who were already proper receptors. Now, let's go to Ephesians, the second chapter. Let's see about receptors and who controls it. Ephesians 2 and verse 2. Wherein in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, that spirit that is now working in the children of disobedience. In other words, they are receptive. They are receptors to the power of Satan into the order of witchcraft, whether it be stage 1, 2, or 3. You have to be programmed into it through illicit sex and drugs. That's the first stage. Then into getting into these weird religions and New Ageism. That's the second stage. Now, the third stage is full-blown Satanism through witchcraft and wizardry. And that's what's coming on with Harry Potter. Okay? Notice, verse 3. Among whom we also had our conduct in times past, in the lust of our flesh, the desires of the flesh, and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. And that's what Satanism appeals to, the flesh and the mind. It goes right back to Genesis 3. Eat of this tree and you will become like gods. Now, is the Bible relevant today or not? What? Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. Those who are already proper receptors. Two, those whose values and attitudes were not sufficiently raised enough to make them proper receptors when the Christ comes, but who could be quickly raised to the proper receptors. And how will they do that? By miracles. so that you will say, look, this has got to be the guy. Look, the Pope can do all these miracles when he's with this great world leader. Number three, those whose values and attitudes were not raised at all, who would never, ever be able to be proper receptors, and what are they? They will be fit for the slaughter. Okay, now let's come back here to Daniel, the 8th chapter. Now, there's a saying in sports, it's never over till it's over. Well, the same way with the Bible. The end is not yet until the end. Okay? Now, here in Daniel, the 8th chapter, let's read about the coming beast. Now, please do not misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Harry Potter is the Antichrist. But I am saying that he is a juvenile Antichrist. Somewhere, the Antichrist is alive. Who it is and where he is, we don't know. And we won't know until he appears on the scene. But he can't appear on the scene until the population has been fully prepared. Now, here's what he's going to be. Verse 23, in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors are come to a full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power, because it's going to be by the power of Satan the devil. And he shall destroy awesomely, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. So finally it's going to happen. Israel is going to go into captivity. Through his policy, isn't it interesting? Policy. Sounds like a presidential executive order, right? Yes. He shall cause craft, and that means witchcraft, to prosper in his hand. So much so that he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. So after this terrorist war thing is over, there's going to be a peace and prosperity like we've never had. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes, who is Christ, and he shall be broken without hand by the power of God. And without hand means by human hand. Okay. Now, let me have a little bit of time here. So all of this is preparing the way for the coming great world leader. And did you know that Islam also will accept this leader? Because in the Quran it says that there will arise a great leader in the end time that they will accept. So they've got to get rid of the radicals. So that will happen. Now, this is a very long report, 15 pages. I'm not going to go through everything here. But it is Harry Potter and the number 11. And in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, isn't that interesting? Stonehenge. Everyone wonders what it is. It's witchcraft. Astrology and witchcraft. We find the usage of the number 11. Harry was 11 years old when he entered the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. The number 11 is considered sacred to the occultist, as it is in the first, as it is the first primary number. Occultists will also add up numbers to give occult numbers that is sacred. Thus, I was highly interested when the bank vault mentioned by Harry, by his mom and dad before their death, was numbered 711, which adds up to 11. Then we learned that in the money from fantasy reality, 21 knots to a sickle, you add up or 29 knots rather to a sickle, which add 9 and 2 come to 11. Harry Potter's wand, which was meant for him, turned out to be 11 inches long. The Hogwarts Express train left at 11 a.m. from the platform 9 3/4. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, we find the following usage of 11. 11 is a primary number to occultists. 33, 3 times 11, which is triple intensity. Guess what 66 would be? Double triple intensity. And guess what 666 will be? But nothing more than just a profound number concerning the power of Satanism. So it would have to be. In Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, we find number 11. Harry is assigned room number 11 in the Leaky Cauldron, where he is to stay for the last 2 weeks of summer vacation. 1 and 1 equals 1 and 1, that's 11. 1 week and 1 week, see, 11. Harry Potter and the fire, the Goblet of Fire, we find the following usage of 11. Evil Lord Voldemort. Boy, you can tell these have to be demon names to come up with this. Has been steadily increasing his power and ability in black arts for 11 years before he felt strong enough to kill Harry's parents. And on and on and on. It just goes through showing the whole thing here over and over again. The Sorcerer's Stone, the Unicorn, the drinking of blood, astral projection, curses, amulets, the Phoenix Bird, demon possession, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, generational witchcraft. I'll read this. This is witchcraft practiced in successive generations on down. In the real world, some of the best examples of generational witchcraft are the families of Rothschild, Rockefeller, Taft, Wadsworth, Payne, Pillsbury, Sloan, Weyerhaeuser, Harriman, Lord, Bundy, Phelps, Whitney, Perkins, Stimson, Bush, and Chaffee. The most powerful satanic families leading the world to the kingdom of Antichrist, the New World Order, have been involved in generational witchcraft for centuries. The most trusted adepts are those whose witchcraft is generational. Thus, the Bush family is truly trusted by the Illuminati. Profound and interesting, isn't it? Let's see. So, this should also help answer the question, should we go out and fight this war? No, we'll let Christ fight it. Let him use the armies of the nations of the world to do it. Here are things that make people susceptible to Satanism. 1, devoid of moral conscience. 2, dissatisfied with their lives in particular and with America in general. 3, the general attitude of those who were protesting during this period, that's the 1960s, were one of the smuggest and self one of smugness and self admiration. They knew the score and despised those who disagreed with them. Then we have here 4, the entire scene seems to possess instability in which the participants are ripe for drugs, witchcraft, and crimes that went along with it. And then it talks about some of these signature crimes that went ahead with it. 5, fear of nuclear war grows steady. War protesters during this era demonstrated courage in the face of American legal system. They also exhibited profound moral weakness, use of alcohol and drugs exploded among the young, and sex moved out into the open. So now you have all of these things on what? Right on television. So people are having their minds conditioned to it. You have violence. Here's some of the things that they go after. Personal selfishness, greed and pride, lust, anger, envy, gluttony, slothfulness and laziness. Here are the things that they bring upon people, desire for sex, power and money. Life is cheapened both at birth and death. Obsession with violence and murder, lack of compassion or empathy, obsession with death, and of course all of these things are coming along with 9-1-1, isn't it? Don't we have an obsession with death and memorial, and we'll always remember them? See, now we'll have more and more and more of that. So the whole society is being set up to receive the Great One, the coming Antichrist. So remember, not everything is all that it seems to be. So where we are in prophecy, I think we're in a great state of flux. So we need to be loving one another, loving God, keeping His Word, and be watching in all the things that we do, because this world is not going to be the way we had envisioned it 25 years ago. The overseas offices are Canada, Post Office Box 125, Brockville, Ontario, Postal Code K6V5V2. For Australia, Biblical Truth Ministries, GPO Box 1574, Sydney 2001. New Zealand, Post Office Box 242, Waihai, Waihi, 2981. Republic of South Africa, Post Office Box 2624, Wilroe, Wilro, Park, Postal Code 1731. United Kingdom, Post Office Box 8224, Whittam, Postal Code CM81WZ, United Kingdom.